The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Welcome back to another edition, a special edition of Spin the Rally Pod. I'm Lisa O'Sullivan. As the season resumes, WRC is back on the road. Rally Estonia, an absolute triumph as far as Ott Tänak is concerned. Who didn't expect him to win? Well, we did send the team out there. Please check out the website, dirtfish.com. You can see David Evans standing in a strange position, and you can read about all the excitement of actually getting back on the road with the rallying. But we thought we'd bring you a little bit of extra bonus content, because obviously the Dirtfish budget is huge and massive, but also sometimes we just need to send our reporters the easiest way around the world. So after the rally, we popped Colin on a boat. And you know what he's like. He can't stop talking to people if they are there to talk to. So once he was on the boat, he had a little look around to see who he could find for a chat. So settle back and enjoy Colin taking a nautical trip away from Estonia.
Well, good morning, everyone. It's the morning after rally. Estonia, and well, it's an early morning boat trip we're taking from Tallinn across to Helsinki. And who should I bump into in the lounge? Well, none other than the sporting director from the Toyota team. It's Kai Lindstrom. Kai, it's an early morning start, heading back towards Helsinki and heading back, I guess, to a very, very busy week. But we'll kick off by talking, obviously, about Estonia. What are your thoughts generally on the rally? How did you feel things went as the first rally back after COVID?
Well, first of all, it was great to restart the season in Estonia. And the organization, competitive side of the rally was just fantastic. It was very, very well organized. And I was very pleased to see that, because I'm sure that the organizer has their hands full of all these restrictions due to COVID-19 virus, and it didn't make the job easy, but still they did a very good rally.
I was surprised by the level of really execution from the organizers. You normally, when you're coming into the championship for the first time, you have templates that you work to. Really, Rally Estonia was creating the template, weren't they, in this new environment? And it was just faultless. It was absolutely faultless from their point of view. And when you think of the time they had to organise it, it normally takes a year, 18 months to put on a round of the World Rally Championship. They went to massive efforts.
Yeah. Okay. Urmo Aava and his team, they've done the rally a few times already, and Urmo, being the ex-driver and having good people like Silver with him working, I think he's seen the level what it should be when you do world championship rounds. He's seen it as a driver, so he knows that these things need to work all the time. And okay, it's still impressive what they did, but
it really was.
Yeah, he knows the level. I mean, it's easier when you've been there and done it, so you know that we have to go and do it like that.
Yeah, of course. And when we look at the sporting side of things, it gave us great entertainment, didn't it? The rally. We'll come on to talking about the Toyotas. It could have been a better weekend for you, but in terms of the overall spectacle, we saw some wonderful competition. We saw some great images. We saw some really challenging conditions. It's exactly what we need. It's not just another rally. It's very much got its own character.
Yeah. It is. It is for sure the special one. I mean, high speed like Finland, but then again, the roads are completely different from what we have in Finland, so it was nice.
This surprised a lot of people, and you know what? It even surprised Ott Tänak, the way that the road developed as the rally, particularly for the second pass. you know, it looked on the face of it like Finland, but it didn't really. Once the cars got in there, and once we got to the second pass, once we got a few cars through, it was nothing like Finland.
Yeah, and that obviously is the problem for anyone to predict. When you have the new rally, you don't know how the surface will handle it and how it will be the second time around. And yeah, I think none of the teams expected that it will get so soft and rotted for the second pass.
Well, that's a very opportune moment then to talk about your team and your performance this weekend, because Tommy's come out to say, look, we did get it wrong in terms of testing. We perhaps didn't anticipate the way that the road would evolve during the rally. How do these things happen? How can, you know, when you think of the amount of testing you do, the opportunities you have for testing, it does often surprise me that drivers will go and have, not talking about your team in particular, but just in general, they'll have fabulous tests. They're at one with the car. The car's brilliant. You get to the first stage and it all goes out the window and they perform, you know. How do these things happen? Is it because it's not just an absolute exact science rallying, or how do they happen?
Well, one topic, like I said, no one expected it to turn out like that for the second pass of the rally. So maybe testing on the rougher roads didn't feel like the right decision at that point. And then obviously we can't just say that we need to pick that road. So it's when we work with the test organizers, they have certain roads that they can offer us, and then we have to live with those roads what we get.
Yeah. Okay. Let's talk about the rally. We saw on particularly the first day, Kai, something rather strange happening, and it seemed to be particular to the Toyota. We saw the delamination issues in particular for Kalle, my goodness me, and we'll come on to talk about him shortly because he was absolutely outstanding. But let's talk about these delamination issues for Kalle, and then we saw it for Elvin, and we also saw that Seb had a problem as well with that. Have you got to the bottom of that? Was it a coincidence, or was there something happening there, maybe a combination of geometry and speed? And what was the reason for that?
At the moment, I don't know the bottom reason. So for sure, Michelin is doing now some investigations, and during this week they will get back to us. So we know that was there something on the tires, or that could have caused it. And then obviously we need to investigate the real reason for it.
In particular, from Kalle's point of view, obviously he then picked up a time penalty for a mistake from the co-driver. These things happen, as you well know, and that we all accept. But, you know, you take out the penalty, you take out the puncture, and Robin Perra could have had his first victory here.
Yeah,
he could have had his first victory.
That is true, yeah.
Do you know what? And if he had taken the victory, I don't think too many people would have been surprised, which is astonishing, considering his inexperience and his age.
Yeah, 2 weeks ago, the national rally in Estonia, I think he was just once again surprising everybody, because he was putting a big fight against Oit on that event already, so we knew that he has a chance to do it here. Then again, these punctures and mistakes, that's part of the game, and they happen. So if they need to happen, okay, he had a puncture, and luckily then they made this mistake, so they're both learning, Jonne is learning. Having the 1 minute time penalty without the puncture would have been even worse. So
it certainly would have.
But that's something like, you know, drivers make mistakes, they are famous, co-drivers won't be famous before they make the mistake. So that's what happened now to Jonne, and it's gone, and now we go forward.
Could I ask you a really, really naughty question? And I shouldn't, but I'm going to ask you.
You're going to ask me anyway.
I am going to ask you anyway. Even if you said no, I wouldn't ask you. But if you think back to your career, and you had a fabulous career. You had a fabulous career as a co-driver. And you still, I'd have to say, look fit enough and healthy enough to just jump into that co-driver seat if you need to. It's quite incredible. You are the only man in the service park who looks younger year by year. What was your biggest mistake? Can you remember one? And that taught you the biggest lesson? What was, because I'm sure Jonne has learned he will never do that ever again in his career. See, this is the sound of a great course. I can see his brain working. You're trying to think, you know. The fact that there's nothing comes to mind.
Well, I was fortunate not to make a mistake on the time controls and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Maybe it's just a missed base note call or something.
Did you ever read a left rather than a right? We saw that with Daniel Ellen in Japan a few years ago.
That I haven't done, so...
Wow. It's incredible. Incredible. But as you say, you learn, don't you? And co-drivers learn. Let's go back to Cali. His rate of learning is, for me, the most impressive thing. He's learning so rapidly. But do we think that was his best opportunity for a win this year? Or do you think he's capable of winning a rally before the end of the year? We've only now got maybe three left.
Well, I don't see why not. I mean, knowing his talent and he's improving all the time, this was third rally with WRC car on gravel in Eston Rally Estonia, so we can expect him to do well on the others as well, and then going now to Turkey. The road position is quite important on the first day, and he's a few cars behind, so why not?
Yeah, why not? It's a little scary to think how far he can go. When you think of how quickly he's progressing, and he's, in terms of speed, in terms of understanding, all of those things, he's nowhere near, reaching the optimum and the maximum yet, and he's capable already of winning. It's scary how far he can potentially go.
Like I said, the talent is there, and he's like way above his experience level on everything else. Like,
have you ever seen anything? Is there any driver that we can say I can't recall a teenager?
No,
that's actually made this kind of impact.
I've seen. No.
It's phenomenal, isn't it? It's quite phenomenal. Continuing on with Cali, then. We saw an unbelievable performance from him in the power stage. Now, it didn't matter in terms of potentially Ogier's championship that Robin Perra finished ahead, because obviously he finished ahead of Tanak as well. But can you see a point in this remaining three rallies this season where you are going to have to say to him, look, the title here is the most important thing, and Ogier winning the title is the most important thing. You're maybe going to have to introduce team orders and Cali play that team support role. Is that a situation that I know Tommy's really against that? But there are big prizes at stake here and big consequences at stake here. Team orders potentially coming into it?
For sure, we all know that question might come, or that is something we need to think about in some part of the season. But then again, there's also another important title for us, which is the manufacturer's title. So we always have to have at least two cars with a good result. So it makes the game a little bit difficult. So
you're juggling all these balls, aren't you? And it's really difficult to which one do you catch, which one do you let drop a little bit?
Yeah, and after all, we have three factory drivers. So to start playing the game from the first rally of the season, I don't know if the man winning the title really feels that the same way than if he wins it by fighting on the stages. That's what I mean.
And to be absolutely fair to Seb, he's not asking for it, is he? Seb has accepted that this year, it's every man for himself. Elvin Evans is still very much, let's face it. Anything can happen, particularly in Turkey. We've seen it before. Yeah. It's such a rough rally. Anything can happen. And it could be that Elvin Evans comes out of that rally with a 15-point lead in the championship.
Yeah, now season being shorter with less rallies, so every rally is very important. So, if you have 13 rounds, you can maybe do badly on one or two and still have a good result at the end of the year. But now with just few events, there is no room to 0 points or mistakes.
And in terms of strategy and managing strategy as a driver, you have the best man in the field there. Ogier knows, he's been there and he's done it. He did it in his 2 years at M Sport, where arguably he didn't have the best car. The M Sport car was very fast, it was very capable, but he was fighting the might of the Toyota team, the might of the Hyundai team, and the Citroen team obviously as well. But Ogier managed it. He knew he couldn't win every stage, couldn't win every rally. He managed it brilliantly. he's very capable of doing that over the next three rallies. And I think it started here. I genuinely think it started here. I don't think he started with the aim to win this rally.
Yeah, I mean, he has a few titles already, so he knows what it takes to get the title. So you can't win every rally, that's for sure. And then you just have to make the plan how to go through.
Talking about making plans, how is your planning for Turkey? You had obviously a three-day test in Greece.
Yes.
Looked interesting. I tell you what, I missed those stages. I remember seeing one of the first rallies I ever went to was with you guys, with Tommy and yourself and Petter and Phil back in the 555 Subaru days. You know, just watching those images coming back out of those stages with these modern world rally cars, it was like, whoa, it was fantastic. Tell me how it went. Tell me how the preparation's going.
Yeah, the test went well, and all is ready for Turkey.
Right.
And
any concerns about the Hyundai in terms of how it's developed? You know, I don't suppose you can really worry about what the opposition are doing, but it does seem as if Tanak has gone there and shaken things up a little bit, added a little bit of his knowledge, his ability, and the car has developed. There's no question about that.
Yeah, for sure they've gone forward like okay, Oit we knew that's his home rally and he's going to be quick in Estonia, but then Preen second, I was well not surprised, but you know it was quite impressive for him.
I think you can say you were surprised because I was certainly surprised. I didn't genuinely think that on that speed rally where you need to be. As you know better than most, you're on those type of rallies, your confidence needs to be absolutely sky high. Your trust in the car needs to be 100%. And to be a part-time driver and to jump in that sort of rally, I was surprised that he managed to show that pace early on and then maintain it through the rally without any mistakes. It was a great drive from Breen. You know, this is the game that Adamo's playing, bringing in these part-time drivers. Is it something you agree with? Is it something that you would consider, perhaps?
Well, we have three drivers signed, and we go with those three, so we don't consider that kind of. But he has a chance to do it, and he plays the game, so it's okay.
Didn't you again when I first came at the sport when you were competing back in the early 2000s when I first came in. It was commonplace, wasn't it? You know, it was commonplace to have specialist drivers to bring in part-time drivers.
Yeah, especially on tarmac events.
Yeah, particularly in tarmac and sometimes on snow events. You know, we saw
Sweden.
Finns coming in to world championship teams to compete. You know, that thinking disappeared for a long time and we saw settled teams for a long time. What do you think? Do you think it's got its merits? You know, I was surprised to see it coming back. You know, the last time I remember was, I think, Skoda many, many years ago, 2005, 2006. Skoda had a year where they rotated drivers. Jani Passanen was one of them.
And
I can't remember who the others were, to be totally honest with you. But that looked as if those days were well behind us. But Dan was not afraid to try different things out, is he?
No. And like you said, you can have specialists, but also there's risks that when you're a part-time driver, like you said, you don't have the routine from the whole year, and it seemed to work well in Estonia for them at least.
So, you know, we have three rounds left. We have two championships to decide. We've got the drivers' championship, which is still
open. We got three co-drivers as well.
How dare I? How terribly rude of me! Quite right, too. I'm talking to one of the most successful co-drivers ever. I forget about that. We have three championships. You're right. Co-drivers, drivers, manufacturers. You know, it is a sprint now to the finish, isn't it? And it's from a position where, you know, it looked as if we might struggle to get a season, all of a sudden it's looking quite exciting. It's looking really interesting.
Yeah, for sure. And like I said, less rallies, the importance of each rally is bigger than normally. So we really have to be ready for every event.
Just a question again. This, you know, we're having to adapt and we're having to innovate because of COVID in every section of our lives, not just our professional lives, but our personal lives and everything. We're having to look at things differently. And quite often, you know, out of crisis comes innovation, and innovation gives us things that perhaps we didn't consider previously. Now, we saw in Estonia a shortened format for the rally, and I think in Turkey we're looking at a shortened format as well. Should we be considering this maybe for next season, for each round, or do you think we could mix and match? How do you think that's working?
Well, I don't see why not, because then again, also one big issue is the cost, and if we are planning cost reductions, short format is good for that as well. You know, the time we need team members to be in the rally, staying in the hotels, is shorter, and also stage mileage being shorter, that is for sure affecting to the costs.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting, isn't it? Kind of something I have to say is it's always an absolute joy catching up with you, and an unexpected joy this morning on the boat as well. And I do appreciate it's still only, would you believe, it's still only 8:40 in the morning.
Is it?
You know, and for you to have a couple of coffees and talk to me this morning, it's been an absolute joy. We'll obviously, if possible, we'll catch up with you in Turkey. It might not be possible with the new regulations, but thank you very much, Kyle Lindstrom, Sporting Director at the Toyota team, for your time this morning.
Thank you. You're welcome.
And one of the joys of sitting on the boat to, the boat from Tallinn to Helsinki is you never know who you're going to bump into. We've already talked this morning to the lovely Kyle Lindstrom, and sitting opposite him was another man I recognise as Tom Fowler, who's the technical director at the Toyota team. Tom, always good to catch up with you. How are you feeling?
Yeah, tired after a long weekend, but we had many things to be happy about over the weekend. Obviously, some things to be disappointed about as well. So, a mixed weekend. But I think the overriding feeling is that we're back in action. And it was really great to be back in the service park and see these cars running how they're supposed to be running, and the drivers fighting out in the stages. So, from that point of view, very happy.
We're all rally fans, aren't we, really? I mean, we're very, very fortunate. We make our living out of rallying. But at heart, we're all rally fans, and it was great to see a top-class rally. And there were lots of question marks over the rally because of the circumstances. But it was great to see a top-class sporting event happening again, just in the basic form.
Yeah, I think during the time we've all been at home, I think many of us have found ways to continue working as much as we can, but it's not the same to be in your back bedroom with a laptop. It's easy to lose sight of why we do this on a daily basis. Just going to the bedroom to do your work and trying to stay focused and motivated on when the cars aren't running and you're not getting any feedback can be difficult. So I think that we needed this to come back. We've been waiting a long time. And certainly personally for me, the moment when we had all the engines running, warming up to leave the service park for the first time, and you hear that burble and the buzz around the engineers and the mechanics making sure everything's correct at the last minute, and those sort of butterflies come back in the stomach that, have we done everything we can do, and is everything correct? And that feeling is a long way from being at home in your bedroom with a laptop. So yeah, it was really excellent.
It was. It really was. And you're quite right. You know, I stood at the start of, actually it was stage two. I didn't go to stage one. The first stage on Saturday morning, and heard the cars off the start line. It was a magnificent sound to hear again. Tom, you know, nobody stood still over the 6 month hiatus that we had. We saw obviously quite a bit of development going on. Can you tell us really what you guys were focused on in terms, because you already have a magnificent car. Your car is practically bulletproof and is like a rocket. But clearly, there's always room for development. Was there any particular area that you focused on over that six-month period?
Yeah, it's difficult to say one thing that we focused on, because really what we did was When we're running these championships, normally it's like a rapid fire situation. So we go to a test, we go to a rally, and we have days or maximum a week in between everything that we do. So our engineers and mechanics and the whole management team is always playing catch up to be ready for the next event. And one of the things that you don't have the time to do quite often is to really just sit down and look over everything from a distance and see where are we strong, where are we not so strong.
Right.
And those small nagging problems that you know need to be fixed but are down the priority list of all other jobs that have to be done in order to be ready for the next time. So we spent some time in the beginning of lockdown to really plan those jobs out and see what can we do and where do we need to focus. We don't know how long this is going to last and how can we use our engineering time to really play catch up on all the things we've been wanting to look at for weeks or years.
So that was very it was a useful period, you know, in terms of the efficiencies of working. It allowed you to take a look at all of that.
Yeah, it's pretty much unprecedented to be able to I think clear your engineering job list backlog. I wouldn't say we cleared it, but we got pretty close. And we used that time to see what we need to do better and how we can improve for the future.
I think the other thing that we have to remember from your point of view as obviously the head of you're the head of design and engineering, you're the man that basically that's your car, is that during this period we had the 2022 regulations just about confirmed in terms of who was going to supply the kit, and you know, we're still working on how exactly it's going to play into the drive train and all the rest. But that must have been one of your biggest projects during lockdown, was assessing these 2022 regulations and how it's all going to work practically with your car.
Yeah, for sure. There's been a big emphasis, certainly in my role, on this topic. We've had very intensive meeting schedule with the FIA and the other teams to try to nail down exactly how we're going to do this, what the regulation's going to be, and try to really get that accelerated while we had the time.
There's some massive challenges there, aren't there, from what we're hearing, talking to M Sport, talking to Hyundai. It's not perhaps as straightforward as just bolting it in and taking pressing a button through the towns and getting a little bit of hybrid electric power. It's not as simple as that. It's a challenge, isn't it?
It is. It's a really big technical challenge. It's such a deviation from what we have at the moment. I mean, adding the hybrid system itself is one thing, but there's also other changes in the regulation, which means that there's very few elements of the present cars or even previous cars that can be carried over.
Wow.
So we're having to do a lot of research and learning in new technologies and different applications. So it's a big challenge, and I think that was during the last few months, trying to balance the future with the present has been one of our biggest challenges.
Talking about the present, obviously, I was talking to Kai earlier about Rally Turkey that's coming up. It's an unbelievably tough rally. We've seen that in the past. We saw it last year. I think you guys had one or two issues there. Everyone's had issues in Turkey, let's face it. What are you doing in particular to address the technical challenges of Rally Turkey? It's the heat, it's the roughness, it's the real challenge of the event. What are you doing to address those?
Yeah, Turkey has been a difficult rally for many people, but I think it's for Toyota it's been challenging. I think if we talk about the environment and the heat and all these elements which make it difficult from a reliability point of view, we've been working heavily on those for other rallies anyway, and it's not a secret that we've had some challenges in the area of cooling and so on. But on the other hand, for rough rallies, we believe that we built a very strong car from the beginning. Maybe too strong at the deficit of some performance in some other rallies where you don't need to be that strong. So we believe now for Turkey this year, our main element to concentrate on was trying to keep the performance level up at the same time as having that reliability, which is always the challenge. So we've been working a lot on raising the performance level within the reliability scope,
right.
And that's really been what we've been working on.
I am listening to what you're saying, Tom, but I'm racking my brain to work out where your car has been disadvantaged in performance. When you said you've obviously built in reliability at the expense of performance on certain rallies, I can't think of a rally where your performance has been notably down. Which ones are you talking about in particular there?
I think if you look at the results, yeah, you don't see it. But
are you keeping that one to yourself? we've got to do a little bit more analytical investigation.
I think when you're engineering a car and getting the internal information, you obviously we know what are the key performance right. indicators that give us speed, and if you ask a driver, he always wants the car to be faster, yeah. because the faster the base package is, the less risk the driver needs to take, and the less chance there is of a mistake. So yeah. obviously it's beneficial for the whole team that the car is not only faster than the others, but a step faster than the others, yeah. so that you can manage risk. Right. And certainly up until maybe the middle of last year, the weight of our car was a disadvantage in some rallies, even though the car was still winning the rally. We know internally what the numbers are, and we know that we could have been faster ultimately if we had been a bit lighter, for example. So right. there's other topics around this, but
it's actually quite scary because your car's already ridiculously quick and reliable. So if you're telling us that what you're working on is to maintain that reliability and build a car that can go even faster, which you've got to do now, right? Because we have seen this big step forward from Hyundai. But it's incredible. It's incredible. You can find more pace within these very, very prescribed regulations. You know, what areas can we look at to find that extra speed? Because the car is built to regulations. The regulations have only slightly changed since they were introduced. You know, when you talk about finding more pace, where does it come from?
At the stage we're at now in development, the areas where you can find extra speed it's very small numbers in each place, and if you find something now which is clearly a big step, then you probably didn't do something right in the first place. So
is that a little comment on the Hyundai maybe, because they've found some big pace?
It's not a comment on anybody, but it's a general comment in
engineering.
In engineering and, yeah. and motorsport yeah. development. Okay. When you come Fair out with enough. Your package in the first place, yeah. in the first few months and maybe the first season, yeah. Every now and again you have a eureka moment and you find something and you realize that some system or some element wasn't working quite as it should, and you see a big step in the stopwatch.
Yeah.
As time goes on, you get to the point where individual developments are very difficult to see, even in the stopwatch.
Right.
And you have to find a combination of different performance gains that add up into one.
Right.
So that's where we're at the moment, is right. that we need to find all the small pieces and put them together, which right. then gives you a step.
I do like, because you know, you're a man that deals with science. You know, and design is very much a science, isn't it? But you're also a little bit of an investigator. You know, it's about taking the various elements and working out the story from the elements that are there. So it's not just about a science. It's not always 1 and 1 equals 2. It's 1 and 1 with a little bit of 2, maybe a touch of 3 in there. It's like a recipe, isn't it, to find that extra bit of performance. Maybe it's stability, maybe it is speed, maybe it's reliability, maybe it's just confidence for the driver. But you've got to find all these elements and bring them together.
Yeah, that's really our job in the engineering department, right. is to analyze and find these things and try to find a way of improving. I think in science, I think one of the key principles when you do an experiment is to only change one thing at once so that you understand what happened. But in rally, that's incredibly difficult to do.
Right.
I think it's one of the beauties of it as a motorsport, is that we can change one thing in the car and we can do a test back to back on the same road, but we can't have them at the same time. So in rally, it's impossible to change only one thing at one time, because every time you drive the road, it changes. Every time you stop for 5 minutes, the temperature changes. Mm. And to try to really narrow down what is causing which effect at what time is very, very difficult.
Wow.
And you have to really get a sense of analyzing and taking the analysis that you've done. But sometimes you have to look at the analysis and say, actually, maybe that's not right. And you have to get a feeling for what to believe and what not to believe, because you can have outside influences which you put blinkers and say, oh, the car's definitely faster in this configuration, but you don't, or it can be maybe self-motivating to think you made the car faster, but in reality the road changed. So we really have to look at ourselves deeply and believe in what we're doing and not try to kid ourselves in many ways.
That comes with experience, I guess, doesn't it, more than anything, you know, to be able to make those calls. You'll have young engineers who'll come straight out of university who will understand the formulas, and they'll understand the figures at the start, they'll understand the figures at the end, but they don't have the experience to interpret those figures. And it's exactly what you're saying. It's being able to look at it and say, yeah, you know, end of the day was quicker than the start of the day, but look at all these other elements. It's fascinating. Tom, one last question for you. I could talk to you for a very long time, but I can see Helsinki coming into sight now. One last question. Your job is a fascinating job, no question about that. What is the most satisfying part of your job? Is it designing a car like the Yaris WRC, or is it what we've just talked about, taking a mature car and working out how to make it better? Which is the best part of your job, or neither? Is there another part of your job that's more satisfying than either of those two?
I think the satisfaction is kind of equal between all of the different elements, but I think the most interesting or satisfying part of it is the variation and following the car. I mean, if we think about what's happened in the last few years, a Yaris WRC didn't exist, and we went from drawing every single part and having it manufactured to Sebastian Ogier driving it at 200 kilometers per hour over a jump in Estonia. So the difference that can happen over a time, and really what you've created, and seeing the results of what you've created is probably the most satisfying part.
Tom, I've known you for a few years, I've been around you for a few years. You had you served your apprenticeship at M Sport. You then, is it fair to say, you became slightly disillusioned with the sport, and you went off? I think you went off to work in a nuclear power station or something, didn't you, for a while? But you've now created a legacy in this sport. You know, you will forever be associated with this Yaris WRC. That in itself must be quite a nice feeling, to know that whenever the story of rallying is talked about, and the story of Toyota is talked about, and the Yaris WRC is talked about, people will be talking about you. That must be quite a satisfying feeling, to have, you know, been through everything, to come back and to have created that legacy.
I think someday that will, in retrospect, be something which is interesting. But when you're inside of it, it doesn't feel so much like that.
Right.
We need a huge amount of people to do what we do, and there's all different skills are required. Many of those I cannot do myself, and I really enjoy working with the variety of different people that we have that builds this into one thing. And I think everyone is part of this legacy, because if you ask me to change the turbocharger in 15 minutes, I won't be able to do it. So we need every skill, and working with these people to do what we do, which to many people is unbelievable, is a pleasure every day.
Tom, it's been a pleasure this morning talking to you, and I do appreciate both yourself and Kai's time at this unearthly hour, although for you boys I'm sure it's perfectly normal to be up and to be working at this time of the day. A joy to talk to you. Really insightful stuff as always. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Spin the Rally Pod from dirtfish.com. As I say, there's so much more on the website about Rally Estonia and all things rallying. Check it out. If you've got any questions you want to ask the team, at dirtfish rally is the best way to get in touch. But we'll be back soon. I'm not sure where everybody is. They seem to be scattered to the four winds, but we will catch up and maybe find out a little bit more about how the world turns when you're preparing for a rally, the logistics of getting stuff in transit. There's one man who knows an awful lot about that, but you'll have to tune into the next episode to find out who that is. As it is for now, bye-bye from me.